Will this help me survive and thrive?
There's a lot of times where we just try to outsource our problems.
All right, so here's some secret sauce. So let's get the bomb thing going, okay?
You're listening to the Roofing Success Podcast, a show created to inspire roofing contractors to achieve optimal success in their roofing businesses. I'm the host, Jim Aline, the co-author of the books Internet Marketing for Roofing Contractors and The Best Known Roofer. I'm also the co-founder of Roofer Marketers, the leading digital marketing agency for the roofing industry. On each episode, I sit down with industry leaders to talk about their processes, the lessons they've learned, and how to find success in roofing.
Hey, welcome to another episode of the Roofing Success Podcast. Sometimes when you really want a guest on bad and you can't make your schedules work, you build a studio in a hotel room, and he shows up from his poolside.
You got to do what you got to do, man. You got to do what you got to do.
Right. This is gonna be a good one, my man. John Brosh from MHI Roofing. How you doing today, man?
Dude, I am blessed and just excited to be here today, man. It's gonna be fun.
Yeah, I'm glad we got to connect on this one. It's been, you know, you're a little busy right now. Let's get a little update on where things have gone for you from when you started in roofing and what's going on now for anyone that doesn't know you.
Yeah, so I'm a Jimmy Buffett song always say, right? So I'm the son of a son of a son of a son of a roofer, right? So my great grandpa, my dad. I got into roofing at an early age, so kind of was in the industry, grew up, learned it, went away, came home, started building homes, got out of the housing industry right before the crash in 2008 and got into roofing. Kind of been here ever since, partnered up here at MHI with Ty in 2019. And we just kind of launched there. And then, we recently got acquired, which was a real fun adventure. You know, it's been a good time. So, yeah. Now we're just working every day.
What's your new role?
So I am COO of MHI. So I was managing partner, but I was still more of the operations type of role. And I'm COO of actually the Florida region as well. So we're helping to manage other brands in Florida. So, you know, I'm doing some traveling. I live in Florida now. Just, I've been here a couple years now. So,
we can tell. So,
yeah, you got the flamingo floating behind me. So this, okay. So real quick story with the hat, my buddy, Jeff Brett, we were in Puerto Rico and he bought me a hat. So I promised him I would wear it. I would wear it the next time I was on a public like podcast or event. So awesome. I got to be a man of my word. So here it is.
That's right. We got to, you know, we're keeping it Florida for sure. That's awesome. So, and having a lot of fun. And that's what we do. I always have a lot of fun when we're, you know, when we're hanging out. And one of the things, like I've been doing a lot of presenting on the customer journey.
Yeah.
And I use you guys as an example in some of my presentations because of the execution that you guys have done. So that's what I wanted to talk to you about today was like the customer journey, man. Like, you know, starting with awareness, then moving into interest and consideration, the purchase decision making phase of the journey, the fulfillment of the services, and then the loyalty aspect of it. So one of the things that you guys have done extremely well is build awareness of the brand. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a day in and day out job, if you will, right? So it's something that you just do. It becomes a lifestyle. So by saying that, like, you know, when you are doing, you know, let's say that you sell a roof, like you still got to have awareness in that neighborhood, right? We might not sell another roof in that neighborhood for another year or two, but it's all about those little touches, you know? So it's whether it's direct mail or it's you're putting a door hanger out, they're seeing the yard sign. It's like, it's just consistency. No matter what it is, the branding and the awareness thing is always about consistency. So, you know, that's the one thing that we've always like, just try to, we just teach all of our reps and all of our, you know, marketing team is like, you got to be consistent. And what do? We keep the brand, you know, the brand colors are always the same. The brand logo is always the same. The lettering is always the same. Like, you know, our art the director of art for us, like he keeps everything like very, very consistent before it goes out. So, you know, I'd say that like, that's one of the main aspects of the brand is you got to keep it consistent, but you got to consistently keep doing it too. So that's the other part. So it's consistency. I would say is the main, is the main catalyst of that. So, yeah.
So if you were, I'm going to throw you on the, you know, you have to start a company from scratch again, no brand. What would some of the things that you would do to build awareness of the new company?
Yeah, so I would stick to the grassroots because it still works, right? Cause, I mean, everybody, I mean, don't get me wrong here. We do the digital marketing with you guys and, yeah, and you know, and we do other things, right? Like TV and media, but grassroots still works. Like, you know, door knocking in a customer service sense really works. So I would still stick to the door hangers and the direct mailers. You know, we've recently, in the last six months, we've been using Lead Scout and connecting it with our postcard campaign. So like the guys, so like if I was going to do it from scratch, I would go find like a Lead Scout that's affordable. You know, it's not like outrageously priced. Connect that to a drip campaign, and then when you go hit the houses that you know need your services, just make a drip campaign and send out the postcards to just those. Like we used to do the neighborhood blitz and the blast stuff, and we still do that in certain aspects. But like if I'm really trying to dial in and I want to get that one customer, I want to knock that door, and I'm going to really just make sure I'm sending postcards to just that door, and I think that would be the best strategy to kind of keep it cost effective. And then the Facebook ad strategy, like, you know, that we've worked out over the past, you know, 3 or 4 years is like every time that we sell a job, we just add that address into our ad set and we do a 1 mile radius and then it drops off after 60 days. Like we don't spend a whole lot on Facebook ads, but it's just that awareness and she keeps popping up in their feed. So that goes back to the awareness side. You just keep popping up. And it's consistent ad stuff that comes through. So yeah, those would be probably the top three things that I would do. Yeah, there's the door hangers, the direct mail, just directly to the home. You know, well, and yard signs and simple Facebook ads, just to get the brand in front of people.
Just to start getting those brand impressions, right? Just the number of brand impressions. I heard recently, you know, we always hear that old advertising rule of seven, right? Like where it takes seven times for someone to recognize your brand. Did they have to see your brand seven times? I heard a new study now that it was like 21. So, you know, it's that what you're talking about is a key and crucial part is that consistency, right? Consistency. Can I add volume to that? Like, would you add consistency and volume? Because you guys are not like you when like just going back to like how you guys, if I remember right, you know, the morning of the build, you're doing door hangers all around the neighborhood. You're knocking, you're doing like the Facebook ads are going. You guys have a lot of things going on at the same time. It's not, you're not relying on just one thing.
Yeah, not just one thing. Yeah. So, you know, with that said too, so then we're in the TV side of things and they see a billboard and we got our yard flags up that are waving. We go to the front of the neighborhood, like, you just want that brand is every time they drive by it, they see it, but you got to consistently do it. So, yeah. And I would say that's probably really accurate too now because we live in such a shortened, you know, awareness world now that it probably tripled from 7 to 21, you know, but it's the same thing. It's like if anybody's ever had kids or even grandkids now, I've got grandkids, but you can't drive past the Golden Arches. If you stop there once or twice, they know what McDonald's is, right? It's a recognizable brand, whether you like the food or not, right? But I'm just saying, it's like, it's one of those things that the brand is there. So, and you drive by it, and the kids are like, "Oh, there's that." You know, that's just what they had to be there one time or two times, and they knew that that's what that brand was.
You could call me a good parent or bad parent. You guys could discuss it in the comments. But I have never taken my children to McDonald's. We have never gone through a McDonald's drive-through. We've never sat in a McDonald's. We have never had McDonald's food. They're 9 years old right now. But boy, they know what McDonald's is.
Like they know what McDonald's is because it's consistent.
It's good marketing, right? What other, you know, then as you're growing, when is it maybe the right time to start adding those, the more cost intensive or the more the awareness strategies that take more of an investment, like billboards, like TV, like some of those things that are, man, it's hard to understand the direct attribution from those, right? It's easier to you know, when the neighbor down the street, you know, saw your sign and they're like, oh yeah, I saw you doing the Joneses down here. That's so much easier to reconcile in the mind of a business owner that's making those investments. When is it then in right. that awareness stage that you're like, now I want everyone to know who we are all the time?
So yeah, it's a great question. So here's the secret sauce of what I've learned over the last 10 to 15 years with this. Is it's a pyramid, right? So you got to think about, you had to have a good base. So you build that base. You got which is grassroots. The next step up, which is less than what you're doing in the grassroots marketing part of it, is now as you go to digital, right? Your SEO, your PPC, your LSA, all the stuff that you can do to bring in things through online presence. Like, that's the next step. The third step is really up at the pinnacle. It costs you the most, but it feeds down to everything else. So if you think of it that way, it's a reverse funnel, right? Because now it feeds down to everything, but you have to get to a certain, let's just say an EBITDA play or a certain revenue style or a certain plateau. Like, once you hit that plateau, it's like, now you got to build to the next level. And now you're at a plateau with all of your digital marketing to enhance that digital marketing and what you're doing in your grassroots marketing. Now you've got to go after TV and billboards and traditional media. Because now you are everywhere, and all that does is enhance everything else. Like, TV is not a lead source or lead driver for us. If you matched it back, like, it looks like it's probably $1,500 a lead, right? But when everybody hears our slogan of, oh, you're the, we do that every single day, guys, when they hear that, then that's a totally different story. So they've seen the TV ad, and then that drove them to the website. So it might be tracked through digital. So it becomes this like enhancement tool to all the other tools that you already have. That's the way that I viewed it, like, because you can't attribute it like the way that you want to. So it's just an enhancement tool.
What revenue range, or I know you said the plateau, I think that is a really interesting way to think about it. Like, if you start to plateau with all of your other efforts, it's time to start adding, right? It's time to put another pole in the water, right? Put a couple of poles in the water. What revenue range do you think that the grassroots efforts might be able to get you to? And then, you know, and I know it's going to be different in different markets and the different based on the hustle of the owner and the reps and, you know, things like that. But if we had some generalities, where are you moving on to some additional things into the top of the pyramid?
So I think that up to, let's say, 5 million is like a really good grassroots, can get you there. And you start to trickle in some SEO, you trickle in some PPC stuff. Now you're starting to get some LSA stuff, you know, but you're going to hit a growth like between that 3 and 5 million, you would hit this plateau that like it's a ceiling, like you can't do any more. Right. You can't get any more leads in. You can't, you know, your sales reps can't close any more deals. So you're going to kind of hit this plateau, and then it's like, okay, now what's the next step? And then you start adding in little things. So I think it's that 3 to 5 range, to be honest. And then I think that next range is probably that 7 to 10 range is like, once you hit about that 10, now you got to start enhancing everything, you know, but to get to 10, you're going to have to go SEO, PPC, LSA, like all these fun nomenclatures that we want to throw out there, right? All these, you know, but like you're going to have to go to enhance that, you know, once you probably hit about that $10 million threshold. I think that's when now it makes sense, right? Now you're making money again, because that five to 10 is actually a growth spurt where you're not making as much money as what you did at 3 million. Like, and I think guys don't understand that, because you got to invest more. You got to spend more in marketing. You got to have, you know, hire people, marketing managers, you know, sales managers, production managers. And now you've got all this growth stuff. So you got to get to where you're making money again. And that's probably about the $10 million mark.
That's a big shift. That investment stage, right? It's a tough one, man. Yeah. Like and if you don't invest, things could fall apart. And you wonder why they fell apart. And it's like, man, I didn't put the time. I didn't put the right people in the right seats. I didn't do those things. So now we're the our customers are aware of us, right? We started with grassroots, moved into some digital stuff. Then now we're, you know, as we're growing, we're moving into more of the high brand awareness type of marketing aspects. Now in this interesting consideration stage, I think that this is where, I think it's where a lot of companies fail, right? We've talked about this. I had Jason Phillips from Phillips Home Improvement on years ago. And the way he framed it was, you have two sales that need to be made. The first is the sale of the appointment. The second is the sale of the roof. And I feel like in this interesting consideration stage, that's where you're selling the appointment and then and really building the trust. You know, that's where they're going to be looking at your website, at your reviews. They're going to be looking at all of these things. Maybe there's, you know, I know you've done some interesting things with, you know, pushing content out to or you know, things about the sales rep and, you know, things like that prior to them even getting to the house. What are your thoughts on that interesting consideration stage? What are some things that people can do in that stage to ensure success and to increase their closing rates down the road?
So it's kind of a basic basic concept, right? So to make any sale, people buy from people they know, like, and trust, right? So if they don't know you, they don't like you, and they don't trust you, they're not going to set the appointment. They're not going to, you know, they're not going to buy the product off of you. So you got to keep those three factors in mind. How do we get them to know us? How do we get them to like us? And how do we get them to trust us? So it's all about setting up that customer avatar too, like knowing who your customer is and making sure that your content or whatever it is you're pushing out there, you know, it could be the pictures that you're putting out there. It could be the ad copy that you're putting out there. Make sure that it fits your customer avatar. And I think I'm using some basic language with that, but they got to know you, like you, and trust you. So to build the trust too, is like these little things that you said, is like, you know, like you have to have a sales funnel now, because in today's time, it's a lot different compared to what it was 10 years ago, right? It used to be just 10, 12 years ago, they'd still call you out of the phone book. And if you had the biggest ad, that's who they trusted the most. It's crazy, right? But you had the biggest page. Oh, well, these guys must be good because they got the biggest page. And they're on the front. Like, they're the first guy you find under roofers. So like knowing that that's how we think is like, oh, because he's the biggest, he could be the best, right? Or he could be the guy that I can trust the most. But I also think that we're living in a time which we kind of had this conversation, kind of I'm digressing here for a second.
Yeah.
I had this conversation yesterday though, is that once you get to a certain plateau though, you kind of start becoming the New England Patriots and everybody roots against you, and all your competition. So you got to be careful to make sure that you're still a man of the people. You're still a company of the people. So one of my good buddies, actually with the hat here, Jeff Brett, is like with King Quality, he does a fantastic job with that. It's like, he's part of the customer journey. He's part of that customer journey. He's part like they, you know, like he is the roofer that's on the roof with them. Right. And so I think that you have to stick to what you know worked with your customers and meet them where they really want you at, which is, can you meet my need and make sure I feel comfortable with this? Because at the end of the day, people, it's know, like, and trust. Yeah. But they make decisions based on, will this help me survive and thrive? The rest of it's just noise. Hey, I got some fireworks out of that. Right?
We dropped the bomb there, John. You're dropping the bomb.
We dropped the bomb. I don't know. That was a thing. But
it's an amazing statement. So
it's crazy, man. So we're looking at it through the optics of, as homeowners, you know, everything else is noise. Price is noise. You know, the manufacturer that you use is noise, right? The underlayment that you use is noise. There has to be something behind the story, right? So it's survive and thrive. So our survival mechanisms, our thriving mechanisms, are all we actually care about. All right, John, so that's cool, man, but how is this going to help me succeed in my life? Well, listen, this is the last roof that you ever have to put on. Like, you have to be able to come up with those types of things to help the customer survive and thrive. So through that funnel, you're helping them understand that this is a peace of mind transaction, right? So you're spending money, but you're getting peace of mind back. So that's really kind of the whole thought process of a funnel. So even with like sending out like the sales rep journey, like this is what to expect. Like you're showing the professionalism, but they need to have that thirst already quenched, right? Where they're not even going to go with you to get the appointment done. So that's the way that, you know, that's kind of our focus on that.
Do you have anything that you're doing? Like, I know you have like that, what are some tips in building that trust before they get to the house? Like, what are some things?
So when we're confirming the appointment, so we send out like a text message that has a YouTube link, right? That goes back to our YouTube page, which is also on our website, which I think helps backlink everything, right? I don't know if it does that well or not, but you tell me that, Jim, but we try to make sure that we're, what's that?
We get them on the pixel. We get them in the retargeting funnel. That's what we do.
Yeah. So they're going to get more and more and more, right? As long as they go to that website page. So, so we send out that link, right? And then they can watch whatever the video is. So it's usually a culture video. It's usually about our people. It's about their sales rep. Like we usually have a couple of videos that we send out because we want the homeowner to be part of the MHI family, right? Mm. It's not just you're just another client. You know what I mean? It's like you're part of our family now. You know, now that you're in they're in the fold now. Like we're going to take care of you. You know, so if anything happens, we're going to be there. You know, and we got the 45 years to back that up. So
this is where I think it's very important and key for people to understand this is we always think about that at the kitchen table. Right. That's sales, right? That's sales. That's how we think of sales. We're making them feel comfortable. We're making them, you know, trust us, like us, but you can start that before, like you can lead them before. And I'm sure that not everyone watches the video, right? But I would, if there was a way to track it, I bet the closing rate on the people who did would be higher, right? Like just a, right? Like it most likely would be higher for the people that do watch the video. Another thing that I think is important is in the call answering. And you guys have, you know, I mean, like set up a call centers, you know, to manage all of your inbound leads. Why not just answer the phone yourself?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we've done both. We've gone back and forth. We still have our internal team that helps with some of the, it's opposite. Like our internal team actually helps with the overflow now. The reason is for the customer journey is, you know, you need to answer the phone on the first two rings, right? Or you're going to lose them, right? So, you know, because in the reality of what today is like when they're, most people are calling you when they're driving down the road. Like they looked it up, they found you. Oh yeah, I got to call the roofer on my way home from work. They're calling you on the way home. And so our bulk of our calls is just kind of weird. It's like between like 8 and 11 in the morning. And then from like 3 to 7 in the evening, like we don't get much commute between time. 11 and three.
It's commute time, right?
So like we've kind of tried to dial that in and make sure and for us to be able to staff that, like, you know, with the number of calls that are coming in, like I'd have to have 20 people on the phone. Right. And so you can't afford to keep 20 people, you know, on the phones all day long. But like, you know, because if you're getting 30 to 50 calls within that time, it's like, you can't answer them all. So we did the opposite of that was like, we kind of route them through and like if it's a high level question, then they send it over to our inbound team so that they can answer it. And so we give them all the high level training where the other ones answer the phone. It's us. They answer, you know, they're getting it all done and getting the appointment scheduled. So it's all about, you got to answer the phone. The most important part is just answering the phone. You know, like if you don't answer the phone, then LSA will punish you too. So
that's right. Yeah. The LSA algorithm will punish you if that phone isn't answered quickly. And that's a great lead source. So, but one thing that you said, you train the callers so, high level. So, you know, even if you've hired an outside service, you guys are training the callers in there on their teams.
Yeah, so we worked it out to where we actually still have some weekly meetings with them and give them feedback. So we start with the manager of that team. They actually gave us a team instead of just everybody answering.
Yep.
So, you know, we kind of demanded a team. Hey, listen, like if you want to have 10 people answer our calls, that's awesome. But we want to make sure that they know who we are and what we do. If you transfer two out and bring two in, we want to keep training the same team. And so that's kind of how that we got to where that we're at with that is like we help continue to train them. And we give them feedback like daily and weekly and, you know, appointment wise, like if we get an appointment that comes back, like now my internal team, they're more of the, like the confirming and making sure that it's something that we can do, because at the end of the day, like we want to go ahead and take the appointment and then let us figure out if it's something that we can actually do. So it might be a single wide trailer with a metal roof that it's just not something that's in our wheelhouse to do. Right. So then we have to kind of filter those back out. Okay. So, but it just depends on the location stuff. But like, you know, it's just the type of thing. It's like, it might not fit what our skill set is. So, you know, so at the end of the day, it's like we continually keep training that back to the front line. And then, you know, the inner guard, if you will, that's what I call our inside team. They're the inner guard. They're right before it gets set to the sales reps. So then they set the appointments for the sales reps. So the appointments are set, but they go ahead and confirm it and then assign it to the sales reps and do that. So
nice. One thing that makes me think of, yeah. There's in outsourcing, right? A lot of people look at outsourcing as a way to solve a problem, and they hope that the company that they outsource to, they're kind of putting a hope that this outsource company will accomplish it in the way that, in the manner that they will, right? I've seen it in the supplementing side. I've seen it in the call answering side, like anything that you're outsourcing. And about what that made me think of is that, to me, and you could give me your thoughts on this, is even if you're outsourcing, right, you want to, treat them like a team member or like a part of the team. There is a managerial aspect to it, right? Even for our relationship on the marketing side, you know, we have a lot of communication. We have an open, you know, there's a frequency of meetings that you guys want to have. And there are things that are that the relationship isn't, all right, guys, you go do that and make magic happen. You know what I mean? Like you go and take care of that for us and you forget it. I think as business owners, we have to, that's a key thing. What are your thoughts on how you've kind of, or how you think about that?
Yeah. So you have to inspect what you expect no matter what. And the only way to measure that properly is if you know how to do it. And so what I've always coached when I was consulting, or even just friends and people would be up in business or other partners and brands now under the Vertex thing, is like when I'm coaching, it's more like, so find the thing that you hate to do the most and conquer that, and then lift and shift that. Right. Mm. So now that you know how it works, like I hate QuickBooks. Like that's not my thing. Right. But I understand QuickBooks. I know how to do it. I know how to put in a journal entry. I know how to do a double journal entry. Like understanding how it works so that you can manage somebody effectively. So just because you're not good at it is just an excuse to me. Like, right. So I'm just not good at that. To me, you're making an excuse for why that you have a deficiency in your business. So you need to go learn it, go take classes, go take night courses. I don't care what it takes, but like, if you're not good at QuickBooks, you need to go learn it or you're going to be out of business anyway. If you're not good at marketing, you got to go learn it because if you hire the wrong person that doesn't have the same mentality and the same flow and you understand at least the basics of it, don't get me wrong here, it's like we have some really smart people, you know, especially on the Vertex level now, like the CMO, like incredible guy. I am a student of what he's teaching. I mean, he's just an amazing guy of like learning things. So you always got to be a student. And I think that what happens is, as business owners, entrepreneurial side, is like, you're like, I'm not good at that, so I don't want to really dig into it because I don't like it. Mm. So your success is in the discipline of, it doesn't matter if you like it or not, you still got to do it. And I think that's where you, that conversation comes in. It's like, you can't inspect what you expect if you don't know what to inspect, right? So like, it comes all the way back. So like, everybody, like on the digital marketing side, I love to see these debates all the time too, of like, you know, SEO sucks and this team sucks. It's like, really, is it the digital marketer or is it you? Like, that's what I want to say. And I'm not a I'm not a marketer, but like, you know, like, is it you or the marketing agency? Because at the end of the day, if you're not giving them what they need and you're not a part of the journey, and if you're not part of, you know, of helping them solve the issues and them knowing who your actual customer is, it's not their fault. It's your fault. So it should always be. So this is the one thing that I've always learned too, is that there's no such thing as bad employees or bad vendors. It's bad leadership. It always goes to leadership. So if people are failing under your leadership, it's you. And that's hard to take sometimes. You know what I mean? So, but that's what it is. Like, if you're failing in an area, it's because of you. And I've had to do self reflection on that. There's been departments that we've had to restructure because I had bad leadership there. And so I went out and I learned, I studied, I figured it out. I found other people, like, reach out. Like, I'm always here to help mentor if, you know, with things that I know. And like, hey, if it's out of my wheelhouse, like, it's out of my wheelhouse. Like, I go find somebody to help me. And that's where your network is your net worth, right? So like, that's mm-hmm. where being able to reach out, like Corey Combs is one of my buddies. Like, yeah. We talk all the time. He's like, dude, like, I've got this thing going on. How are you solving that? I'm like, man, I got this going on. Like, how'd you solve that? I'm like, when you can collaborate, you know what I mean? And now you're able to really fix some real high level things and learn from other people that are struggling with the same thing. But back to the story with it is like, more of like, if you don't know how to inspect it, it's your fault. And if that vendor is failing, it's your fault. You can't blame it on just the vendor until you can come back to yourself and say, did I do everything I was supposed to do to help them succeed? And that should be with any vendor or any employee.
Any vendor or any employee. And that's what I like that's
I don't
what
know if that's the right answer.
No, but I like that's where my mind is too, or what I've learned over the years too, because there's a lot of times where we just try to outsource our problems. And in the outsourcing, there's people who hire, you know, they'll just go in and hire sales reps and hope for the best. Right. They're outsourcing that problem, but they didn't, what you're talking about, they didn't learn sales so that they know how to train and teach and coach and mentor and show, right. And so let's move on to that. Let's move into the sales into the purchase and decision making phase of the customer journey. Now, you know, let's talk a lot about that. I know, you know, man, a lot of people are, you know, you have your one call closed style, you have your, you know, there's lots of things that you could be doing in the purchase and decision phase. You know, they're aware of us. we've built a level of trust with them, hopefully. And now we're hopefully the way I look at it, if to me, good marketing makes salespeople order takers. Right. So if you have built, if you have answered so many of the customer's questions and objections before you get to that kitchen table, that's, you know, they become order takers.
Yeah.
Right. But they still have to know how to sell. Right. So what are your thoughts around that purchase? What are some key things that create success in that purchase and decision phase?
So everything goes back to consistency. So you have to be consistently training. You have to be consistently, you know, practicing your trading profession. You know, like there's the old story of the two lumberjacks, right? And they're both out there working, right? You know, and they're cutting down trees. And the one guy leaves for 2 hours from 12 to 2. And they both work from, let's say, 8 to 5, right? But one guy leaves from 12 to 2 every day and comes back and he cuts down 30% more trees. And the other lumberjack finally ask him, well, you know, listen, you leave for 2 hours, but how are you actually, you know, outperforming me? He says, well, I go home and I sharpen my axe. Right? So, like, we need to have that mentality, is that if we're not sharpening our axe every day, we're going the other way. You can swing harder at it. It doesn't make it better, right? If you got a dull axe, it doesn't make it any better when you're trying to chop down that tree. So the key to it is, you know, if you want to chop down more trees, you got to keep sharpening that axe every single day. And, you know, it's just like, you know, and I learned that out of the farming business, right? So, I mean, I was a sheep farmer's son, but, you know, but like talking to those guys cutting down timber, like, you know, they don't work the 12 hours straight. They only cut trees for like 4 hours, and they're literally probably 2-3 hours a day sharpening up their chains on the chainsaws. So it's like, yeah. When you think about it in those contexts, it's like you have the tool, but you got to sharpen the tool. So the tool is the sales process. The tool is the closing mechanism. You know, we can revert back and talk about like Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan and Tiger Woods. Like they sharpened their tool every single day, right? And they didn't let anybody like get in their way. So every day. And so like, if you're a sales rep and you're in our organization, if you're closing under 40%, there's something wrong because we set you up for success first. The second thing is I guarantee you that you're not practicing and you're not, you know, using those tools. And if you are, you're not sharpening your tool set. And so like our minimum is like a 40% because like you said, we've done a great job to get you there. I don't want, because order takers, like I can hire anybody to go close at 25%. You just walk in and close because our brand is strong. So do I need to go hire 27 sales reps or can I do it with 14? Right. So like, you know, do you want to take the guys that you have and give them a better life? And now you've got less people to focus on. So it's all about having a sales process. So that's step one. You got to know how to train it. When you just hire guys to solve the problem, you actually create a problem. So if you don't have the process and they have to fit in that process, you know, like we actually never hire inside the industry. Typically, like we have one guy on our team currently that had ever sold a roof prior to here. Like we don't want guys that have sold roofs typically. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that we won't consider it or we won't, you know, look at it. But at the end of the day, we have higher success rate with people who have never sold a roof. So, but it comes down to you have to have a baseline. You have to be able to train. And then you have to give them a base training. And then again, it's that pyramid. You got the basics. You go to the intermediate. And now you get the expert stuff, right? But yeah, that would be my answer with that is too, is like you have to have a process and you have to be able to train to that process and you have to be able to hold them accountable within that process. And without a process, you can't hold them accountable.
Let's talk about that process. You know, how much effort are you putting into the consistency of that process? Is every rep allowed some flexibility in their sales process or is it, hey, you're running this sales process right here. This is how you're doing it.
So it's a playbook, right? So if you go to play at the New England Patriots, the playbook is opposite of what the Pittsburgh Steelers are. So will you have some room to have your own trash talk when you're a defensive lineman? Sure. But you're still going to run that stunt play, right? So it's the same type of thing, right? So you have some flexibility, but it's not really like you have the guardrails. You like, you know, that's how we've developed it. And really the guardrails are more of like teaching you what to ask when you should be asking it, but it might not always fall within that aspect. You might have to ask it later or you might have to get that answer later. So that's really where that's at. But it's the same thing inside the sales presentation. It's like, you know, we used to have this 90 slide sales presentation, took you 45 minutes to get through. Now we, you know, after we partnered with Engage and we developed this new presentation to where it literally just has a title slide and motion graphics and that's it. And so now the sales rep, we teach them to be dynamic. They know the subject of the slide, but it gives them the capacity to, you know, to attach that slide with what the customer need is. Right. So they do have that kind of a guardrail system. So that's hard to train. I'll be straight up. Like it's easier to train. Here's the script. You don't go off the script. But it's better to train a dynamic presentation. Right. So but that's why that you got to hire a certain type of person. You got to have ongoing training. So we teach them a script to get started. All, you know, always don't get me wrong here. And they got to learn the script and know the basics of the script and the why behind the script. And then we start throwing curveballs at them, you know, each week, and, you know, in more training. you know, I mean, our teams train twice a week, right? So it's Tuesday, Thursday mornings. Like, you know, we have sales meetings, but sales meetings are, hey, here's the numbers. Let's start role playing, right? So, because role play is the main thing, because things change, and like you've got to keep your act sharp. So,
definitely. Beyond the training aspect and the sales framework, I'm going to call it a framework that you're using, right? Now you have a framework, okay. Not a script. Beyond that, what are some other things that you're doing in that purchase and decision phase that you feel are impactful? Are you guys doing the, you know, kind of a good, better, best style where you're offering multiple options and upsell? Like, what other things in that sales process are you doing to maximize your conversion rates?
Yeah, that's good. That's a good question. So back to being a sheep farmer's son, right? So sheep don't eat complicated grass. That's what I grew up hearing every day of my life, right? I didn't understand that, obviously, until you start to apply that. So we as people, like we don't consume things that are complicated. When you see multiple numbers on a page, it's very hard to consume all that data. And you're actually building in your own objection. You know what? Like, I really think I want the middle one, but the lower one, let me think about it and I'll get back to you. So we take the approach is everything is this or that, right? So it's price or payment, right? You know, you get one package with price or payment. We got a 1-year price or this payment type of thing. Like, that's kind of the approach. But the main juice behind that, though, is more of like keeping it as simple as possible. We feel that the customer deserves the best roof possible every time. So we start there. You start at the highest. So it's a best, better, good, right? You start at the highest. It doesn't meet their needs or their budget. Then you go to the next one. Okay, well, listen, so let's go ahead and take some of those products off there. Let's look at the next one. Okay, well, maybe it's just it doesn't fit in the budget. Let's go down to the good package, right? So, because people can consume data that way. When you throw all of them out there at once, you overstimulate them and you give them a reason to give you an objection. Now you can have a conversation because you go from best, better, good. So when you talk of the best, because everybody deserves the best, you know, like if you go to the car, you know, place like if you walk in there and I want to buy an F-150, they're going to show me the Platinum Lariat, you know, whatever the top package first. Let's go drive this one real quick, right? Why do they do that? Because that's what you really would want, but it's a little bit out of your price range. Okay, let's step down to the regular Lariat. Let's go down to the XLT. Let's go down to the XL, right? But they usually bring you back from the top down. Same type of thing. So we already have that as our purchasing habit. So and at the end of the day, like, it's not about trying to upsell them into a luxury vehicle. It's more like it is the best package that's available. Let's start there, right? Because we think everybody deserves to have the best products with everything. Now let's go down to the better products. So we think that everybody deserves to, you know, I mean, like, you can come down to meet what their need and budget is. But if you start low, you can't go high. If you start low, so I've seen sales approaches which I understand it, but like they talk about bolting it on. I've never agreed with that. Like, I think you start with the best and you take off. Because once you say my price is 10 grand, then you add in 2 grand for this, you add in 3 grand for that, and you add in 4 grand for that. Why didn't you just start at 19 grand, right? You know what I mean? Just start at the best and then take things off. Because instead of having to negotiate the price, you can take product off. You can take that's the number, right?
Yeah, that first.
You can't go higher than that number.
Yep. That first number is embedded in their minds. So, yeah, I like that. Now you get the sale. Yep. You get the sale. Now we got to fulfill it. And this is where I think, man, this is where you're leading into the loyalty, right? Like, you're building that raving fan. You're proving your worth, right? You're proving yourself to the customer. What do you guys do from the time that contract is signed until the time the job is done to ensure that they become a raving fan for MHI?
Yeah, so it's a concierge service. So it's a white glove service. So the sales team will bring in, you know, brings the job in, if you will, through the system. And then the account manager then takes over. They reach out to them. within a day, you know, and they go through all the details with the homeowner. They get the material orders built. If there's any like discrepancies, they work through all that. They get the work orders, the material orders built. We start with all the permitting phases. Then we push it over in the to be scheduled. Then our account managers are always calling the homeowners, you know, just to kind of let them know what's happening, when their job's going to be scheduled. You know, we typically like the sweet spot that we found is around 3 weeks out is like the sweet spot. So like whenever we get a backlog and now we're 5 weeks out, now it's time to recruit, hire, and train some more field ops and some more crews. But like, you know, but if we're at 2 weeks out or 1 week out, now it's like, okay, now we got to get some more sales reps. So like you can learn to balance the company that way. But yeah, but like, so we have an account manager that basically takes them from the beginning to the end of the journey once the job is sold. And that's who the customer talks to, relies on. That's who they pay. That's who gets the final review. Now we have on-site foremen. We call them quality control guys. So our quality control guys are on site. And they're one-to-one with a customer, but like the account manager is probably, you know, 4-to-1 with a customer. They're probably working with four jobs a day, which is not real hard for one person to run four jobs. So we try to make sure the load is not heavy, right, to where they can take care of the customer. So that's the most important part is they're happy and satisfied at the end.
I like to the way I like to put it is if your customer is wondering, you're losing. It's the way I've been framing it a lot recently.
Yeah, it's good.
And so that's what this reminds me of. It's like they have this concierge, this account manager, this person that a dedicated person to take them through the whole process to make sure that they aren't wondering, right? Yep. What types of communication are you having them do? What rhythm? What's the communication rhythm? What are some of those things?
No. That's a great question. So the first thing is we find out what their love language is on that first call. If they prefer a phone call, if they want a text message, or they want an email. So we call it a love language, right? So if they prefer an email, then we will email them all the information going forward unless they want a phone call. If they prefer a phone call, we call them every time on a phone call. If they want a text message, then we text them, and everything stays in the system, right? So we can see everything. So that's the first step. And then after that, it's like it's initial call, you know, once it gets through the permitting phase, you know, which is, it depends on what location, but typically that takes 3 to 5 days max. And then they reach out again. Hey, listen, everything's good there. Permitting phase is done. We're getting all the material orders and work orders ready. You know, we're going to put you into the scheduling queue. You know, we're looking at 2 weeks out. Right. But I'm going to call you, you know, in a few days and let you know where we're at. You know, if there's a cancellation, would you consider moving forward? Right. So you're always trying to make sure that the crew is always working. That's why if you're not in communication with the homeowner, you can't move that person forward. You don't know who could be moved. Yeah, man. You know, I don't care. Just come anytime. You know, like those are we love those customers because then like you get a guy that, hey, something happened. You know, my grandma passed away and I've got to leave town. I'd rather be here. Cool. You know, so you just got, okay, that's great. We'll put you to the, you know, for 2 weeks out or whatever. And then we can move somebody the next day to get them in there. So if you don't have that communication, all you do then is you lose traction and your backlog gets larger because it's not organized. So that communication helps you with that as well. Hmm. So, but the touch is no more than 5 days. It's typically 3, right? But no more than 5. So it depends on what the customer is looking for. But we try to be in touch at least once a week. You know, but if they know that it's a white glove customer, as we call it, then they'll be in more contact with them, you know, just to make sure that they're kept abreast of everything. Because, I mean, there are customers that just want to know, like, hey, listen, you said it's 2 weeks. Are we still on for 2 weeks? Okay, well, you said it's a week and a half now. You're like, and that's okay. It's just a personality type that we have to learn to manage. So we've helped our account managers keep a positive attitude about it, right? This is a white glove customer. Like, we want to make sure that we give them the white glove treatment. Everybody gets the white glove treatment, but it's more of like identified in the system, right? Because some people, like in years past, I've heard of other companies calling them like a potential problem customer. it's not really a problem customer, really, because if you can take care of them, like they're going to be a raving fan. That person will be a raving fan. So I view it as a white glove customer. You know what? Let's give them a white glove treatment. Let's make sure that they get what everybody else gets, but make them feel like if they got more. Then, I mean, if that makes sense. So because they want to feel like if they got more. So, and the only thing that you're really giving them is two or three extra phone calls, right? So we're not really giving them anything more. We just know that they want more of communication, and that's their love language. So it's just trying to figure that out per customer, and that's what we do with the account managers. And that's a fun training thing and coaching thing and leadership thing, you know, with our account managers too. So is leading them through that, because he's like, oh man, this person's like, you know, they're calling me every day. I'm like, this is a white glove opportunity. Show them why they chose us. Right. And so that's always kind of the answer to them. Like, let's show them why they chose us. Right. You know, that's the way that I've tried to have the perspective on, instead of ever having a problem customer. If the customer becomes a problem, it's because of us. So,
and that's what creates the raving fan, right? And that's what we're looking for. The best contractors that I've talked to over the years, and it's why, like, you know, when Job Nimbus did their peak performance report, that contractors say they're like the best lead source always is referrals, right? Oh, but to me, it's who refers you. It's the person that you do good work for, right? Like that's the person that you take care of and that you manage that relationship and you build that relationship. Let's move on to the loyalty phase, because that's where you're getting those referrals from those customers. What are you doing to ensure that you're getting referrals from them, or you're doing your best to get referrals from them, that you're keeping yourself top of mind with them? What are some things that you're doing after the job is completed to make sure that they remember MHI Roofing?
All right. So here's some secret sauce. So let's get the Bob thing going. Okay. So it's really, again, it's consistency, right? But but that's just a dull answer, but there's a couple of things here. One is we've partnered with Get the Referral. So we're able to help them track referrals. We encourage them to do referrals. The reps are out there with their homeowners and making them advocates. And then our sales rep gets those leads for themselves too, right? So that encourages the sales reps to get out there to get the homeowners, get them referrals. But once the job is done, like we also, you know, I'll throw a plug in here with Dave at Dope Marketing. We send out a box of cookies with a thank you card. It's just fully automated. They get the box of cookies. We follow up and ask the question, hey, I just want to make sure you got those cookies. You know, it's that easy. And they're like, yeah, we got the cookies. Well, great. So like, would you care to leave us a review? Are there any friends or family? Like when they're in their peak moment of getting these delicious dirty dough cookies or whatever they are now, right? They want to help you do more because they're happy with their roof. You gave them more reciprocity, and now they want to return the favor. Even though they just paid us $25,000 and they got a $20 box of cookies, right? So it's that gesture. It's that reciprocity gesture, and then you ask for the referral and the review again at that point. So, and I think that's been the best nugget that we've pulled out of that.
Yeah, and so it's that touch point and asking. Like, it's amazing how many people don't ask for a referral. Like, what, you know, like, and continuing to ask and continuing to ask. What other thoughts do you have as we kind of conclude here? What would, you know, this is there's a lot of stuff. You have a lot of, there's a lot of things. It is I've known you for years. It's taken years of implementing and tweaking and testing and, you know, doing different things. What would you give advice to someone kind of to finalize here? Like, how do you get from where you're at to where you guys are?
Good question. The main thing is always be willing to change and adapt to things, but don't just change to be changing, right? So make sure it's a calculated, it's an educated move, that you study things. Anytime that you make any type of a change, you have to give it a 90-day run. Like, you can't just, because everybody's going to push back no matter what the change is. I don't care if it's perfect or if it's good or if it's bad. Like, it doesn't, like, you have to give it a 90-day run and then make tweaks. Like, you have to get the original initial plan execute the plan, give it 90 days. Like, if there's major things that come up that are major flaws, fix those as you go immediately. But I think overall, like, if you want to execute a plan and you really feel good about it, you've talked to the internal team, you've done collaboration with some other people, and like, you've got your plan ready to go. I don't care if it's setting out KPIs with the sales team, or if it's, you know, sending cookies after the job, whatever it is, like, or a new SEO company, whatever. Like, you've got to give it minimum 90 days, right? And make sure that you put in everything that you need to put into it. So everything that you want to do as a new process, you got to give it 90 days and then evaluate, right? So our expectations might not be what we thought it would be. And then you take the wins out of that 90 day. Okay, so what's the wins, right? Do the wins outweigh the losses on this? You know, what's our loss ratio look like now? Like we sent out, you know, $5,000 in cookies. What was our yield? What was the return on that? Great. It looks like that we got, you know, 100 referrals out of that. Well, that's great. That's $50. You know, like you can start to quantify it then. It's hard to quantify it unless you stick to it and then measure it at the end of it. So have a way to measure it through it, so at the end of it that you can look back and measure it. But I would say that's all it's been, is just trial and error with those things. We've tried some things that failed miserably. I mean, we've tried some really bad ideas that we thought were really great at the time, but it also gave us some really good ideas because we learned stuff. So on the ugly roof side, I'll share this. Like, we thought it would be good to, because we love the name Ugly Roof because it's like a talking piece, but like, we thought it'd be a good idea to like do this voicemail drop thing to people, right? This automated voicemail drop. And we were getting calls back from people saying, who wants an ugly roof? And so like, we kept hearing that. So I'm like, let's lean into that. Like, this is a horrible campaign. Like, one of the worst things that we've ever tried. But it gave us other ideas to like go to other content with, like, well, who wants a, you know, yeah, you know what? Who wants an ugly roof? You're right. That's why that we're here. I mean, but that's a little different campaign. But still, it's like, look at what the bad stuff is and try to lean into it and understand it. And then you can also spin that into something different, right? So you can always, if you're always learning and you're always pulling and extrapolating stuff out of even all the bad stuff, like, there's always something to be learned. And I think that's the main thing, is like, even when you have a failed campaign, what did you learn from it? What can you use in the future? You know, what do you want to do again? What do you never want to do again? Right. So like, you know, like, that's what I would say, is like, you know, it's like, just learn as you go, give it 90 days, reevaluate it after 90 days, and then, you know, move to the next thing. So I've always just kind of done, you know, I work on a project for, you know, a quarter, and then we implement it for a quarter. And then while that one's implementing, I'm working on another project, and then we can implement another one. So don't make too many changes at once, you know, because you'll overload the team. Like, it's taken us 5 years to get to where we're at with, you know, a change every quarter. Right. You know, these little incremental changes that'll get the ship to turn to where that you want it to go. And then eventually it's on the track that you want it to be at, you know, and there's times when you turn it all the way to the right, you're like, oh man, you got to turn it all the way back to the left. But, you know, I mean, because you get off course occasionally, but just if you do it in 90 day sets, it's easier to readjust the ship.
Awesome, John. Thanks for your time today, man. Glad we could get to connect. This has been another episode of the Roofing Success Podcast.
If you would like to generate more revenue through your digital marketing efforts, please visit roofermarketers.com to get a copy of the book, The Best Known Roofer. Also, check the training section of the website for guides on everything from running effective pay-per-click ads to how to properly set up your Google My Business listing. Thanks for listening.